The Junes are 75 and 9, the awesome Wendy's in their prime, the bowl is quick, the batsman fine. Remember? Do you remember? Nope, I can't remember, that was too long ago. Yeah. Holding Marshall, Garner, Lloyd, and Mighty Bid. Mighty Bid. They were going for the hat trick, the greatest team that lived, that lived. They swagger, then they stagger out. They shake their heads, they cry. How on earth did we lose to a team that played Yash Ballet?
This is Sid Monga and Fidel Fernando, channeling our radio voices, or trying our best to do that, in a podcast which has come about in a very interesting way. We'll start with our hotel rooms.
Yeah, so we're in Newcastle, and we have to check out today. We're hoping to do the podcast in the hotel rooms.
Which, where it was nice and quiet.
Yeah, but we both had to check out.
We were kicked out.
Yeah. In fact, the cleaning lady came in while I was still in there and basically shouted at me to get out.
It's not possible to clean a room with us still being there.
Yeah. But we have to record this podcast, so we went to a cafe next, but there was music playing there.
It was a very nice cafe. Music was soft. We could have done it. You would have heard our lovely voices very clearly, but with music, copyright issues.
Yeah, Elton John would have sued us for sure.
His agents are waiting. They're listening to every cricket podcast.
Disney would have gone bankrupt because of the podcast going live. So then we decided, let's find a park.
Yes. And again, you would have heard our voices clearly, but there were quite a few cars going around. And while there are no copyright issues, although Fidel still thinks that Hyundai might say, hey, it's our engine.
Yeah.
So we had to move away from there. And the only place we could think of that would be quiet is a...
It's a cemetery, yeah. A cemetery on the outskirts of Newcastle. And by the way, if imagine like if you saw two brown guys with like big, but we've all got our bags here because we had to check out, just sitting around in a cemetery. Like if this happened in my neighborhood, I would definitely call the police.
And especially if they were talking cricket.
Yeah.
Which we haven't yet started doing.
Yeah.
By the
apparently
way,
that's what this podcast is about.
We are in Newcastle because we are covering the Cricket World Cup.
Yeah.
And we have had our issues with this Cricket World Cup. Let's get to gripe number one. My gripe number one was the format.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I, without having lived through this World Cup, I used to think, because I had all these glorious memories of 1992 where I didn't see a single ball actually, but I've just heard stories of the semi-final and the final and the highlights of the semi-finals and the final. I thought, oh, that's the greatest format alive. Like, it's all teams playing against each other. There won't be any flukes entering the semi-finals. But I'm sure if we had to live through all those games, we would have all cribbed about there being so many games, first of all, there being so few teams, and then there being so many dead rubbers with teams that are not competitive right from the start.
Yeah, so, and we had like the first couple of weeks, I think the Bangladesh beating South Africa was one result, and then Pakistan beating England was another result to get excited about, because those were both somewhat unexpected, especially Pakistan, England.
Yeah.
And that helped in those early weeks, but then it all seemed to be suddenly going to script as well. Like, it was like very, very early on, 2 weeks in, you knew that New Zealand, England, Australia, and India were probably going to be the four teams. Like, it almost seemed set.
It seemed a format that was built to give these big teams, which have got big viewing markets, 9 games at least.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, if they are good teams, they will make it to the semifinal. So you're getting at least 10 or 11 games out of your big teams, which happen to be the best teams in this tournament, which we can begrudgingly agree now, I think.
Yeah, I think the four best teams did get in. Though I will say New Zealand were done a favour by the rain. Pakistan were maybe done a disservice by the rain, because they might have beaten Sri Lanka. New Zealand didn't have to play their match against India, which on balance they probably would have lost. So they would have ended up on 10. So the rain has played all those washed out matches. I think we had 4 washed out matches. Has now had a knock on effect, and now we're seeing the results of that at this end of the tournament.
Yeah, I think arguably, yes, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, we would expect Pakistan to win, but that was one of the most anticipated games for us, because we both believe that they are actually one in spirit, these two teams.
Yeah, they are the two craziest teams in world cricket right now, at least among the full member nations.
Yeah.
They are the most insane teams. And they've proved that in this tournament. They're the ones who've actually brought this tournament to life. Without Pakistan and Sri Lanka, this tournament would have been awful.
Sri Lanka kept it alive. If Sri Lanka had not beaten England, we were looking at about 20 dead rubbers.
Yeah.
And if Pakistan had not picked up the ball from there and turned it into this massive, massive ride of...
And Pakistan fans.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you have to give them huge props. They have lived every moment. They have not just lived their own match. They have lived every match, every moment they are thinking of scenarios.
Yeah.
It's been just...
And the Pakistan team has taken... I think like very few tournaments does a team take its fan base through as many like gut-wrenching emotions as Pakistan. Like you feel everything from ecstatic euphoria, like transcendental joy, to like absolute utter disgust, and everything in between. There's like frustration at the rain, maybe there's excitement about this new batsman, well, he's not new, Babar Azam, who has been ripping it up but then has come to the party in the World Cup in a way that, you know, it's like more of a coming of age than he has even had over the last couple of years. And so they were, yeah, that's been such a good story in the World Cup. I've unfortunately not covered a single Pakistan match.
But you have lived it.
I've covered Sri Lanka matches, which is pretty much the same thing.
You're playing for Pakistan?
Yeah.
The beauty of this story is it started as a sort of a self-mocking, self-deprecating joke. It began well before the World Cup, the similarities with 92. The beauty is how it became serious. And I'm sure the team has not spoken about it. I'm sure that they also followed it and they also kept thinking about it.
No, I'm sure they would have spoken about it internally.
They won't speak about it in the press conferences.
Yeah.
But then in the end, when eventually it didn't end up that way, most of them made great jokes about it. One of the greatest gags is that, hey, when Kohli gets out playing a soft shot and then Pant almost runs himself out, the greatest gag is Pakistani fans saying, no matter which team we support, starts playing like us, Kohli gets out like Hafiz.
And even yesterday, New Zealand had some like gloriously Pakistani moments. Kane Williamson getting run out. Taylor getting run out. And that was New Zealand, and then just luck going against them as well, like in a big way. Yeah.
And in a fitting way, it has been ended by other teams and not by themselves, because they had left their fate in other teams' hands.
So yeah, I mean, thank you to Pakistan
and Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka had, I think, in this World Cup even, like, have had the most insane ride. Like, no one, I think, when I first, before I came out here to Kauai, I thought, what would be a good result for Sri Lanka if they win three matches, right? But if they win three matches out of nine, I would have been impressed. Yeah. Given the place that they were, the ninth ranked, haven't won a decent match for a year. And then they beat England, which is like beyond...
It's as good as three matches.
Yeah, it's as good as three matches by itself.
Because of the impact it had on the whole World Cup?
And the unlikelihood of it happening, England are like... If you go down and rate the Sri Lankan 11 across the England 11, I think like Malinga, you'd probably pick Archer over Malinga.
I mean, with Malinga's, I wouldn't say work ethic, but his apparent fitness, I don't think England would pick him.
Yeah. Literally zero of the Sri Lanka players would make it into the England team.
No.
And yet...
They've given us this tournament. They've rescued this tournament out of the abyss.
But now we're getting... So this is where we got to, and now we're getting to this stage where we had 2 weeks of like glorious uncertainty. Is England going to get knocked out? Is New Zealand not going to make it? And now we've ended up in a situation where...
Pakistan need to beat Bangladesh by 316 runs.
Which is not going to happen.
No.
I think that's even beyond Pakistan's insanity. So I feel like though it's been like this tournament pulled me in over the last couple of weeks, and then now it's just given me the like if what could be a damp ending possibly.
All these big teams are like, I don't know how much of WWE you follow. They are like those baby faces handpicked by Vince McMahon, who are big and strong and who are popular with a larger fan base, and smarks don't like them that much. They actually even boo them, or they riot when they win. So for about a couple of months leading into the biggest event, they might prop up indie wrestlers, they might give us hope, but in the end, the main event most often goes to these guys, which is what is happening now. With the main event is with the big three.
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch any wrestling because I, although I'm a man, I've gone through puberty, so it has no.
Admit it, it's the greatest form of theater.
It's today. It's really not. But I have a different analogy. It's like Game of Thrones. Like it pulled us in and made us hang on every word, and then it gave us that season 8 awful ending.
Basically, Sri Lanka and Pakistan didn't have any source material now.
Yeah. It's like the World Cup ran out of source material.
Yeah, we had the source material of 92. This happened in 92 too.
Yeah.
Baan mein bhi hua tha.
Yeah.
But now, finally, we have just run out of source material.
And we're going to end up with Bran on the throne and these rushed endings.
Yeah.
So it feels like that. I mean, there is a chance that the semifinals could be incredible. I mean, if New Zealand go on to win it, that would be crazy. The only thing, though, is about New Zealand is I can't, and I've lived in New Zealand a while. I love the New Zealand team as well. They're a great team to watch. But I can't abide New Zealand winning this World Cup and then 2 months later possibly winning the Rugby World Cup for a nation of 4 million. That's like, just share the glory around a little bit. That's a bit, it'd be great if they win this one and lose the rugby one. I think that would be a great thing for New Zealand to go through as a nation.
But that's unlikely to happen. Gripe number two. Your World Cup comes to this country once in 20 years. Ashes comes every 4 years. Why not give the prime slot to the World Cup and give rain less chance to affect matches and play the Ashes before the World Cup? World Cup is 10 teams. Ashes is 2 teams. World Cup is once every 20 years. Ashes is once every 4 years. Why not have this as your marquee event of the summer?
Because I wrote that piece about rain and how Sri Lankan ground staff could be possibly doing a better job here. Pretty much every English person who had an issue with that has got in touch with me over the last couple of weeks and told me that actually all the holes in that story, or the holes that they see in that story, and one of them was that you can't actually predict weather in July and August as well, and September, and that it just rains haphazardly all through the English summer, and that you can't reliably say that those months will be drier than this month.
Fair enough, but I think you would be giving yourself a slightly better chance if you played it in August.
Weirdly, this being played in June has made things tougher for England, because I think if you had drier weather, we would have had more flat tracks.
Yeah.
That England are obviously the best team in the world on those kinds of pitches by a distance as well. And because there's been rain, they weren't able to prepare the tracks the way they might normally do for one-day cricket in England. And that's what actually brought the series alive. Like, had that Leeds pitch in the match against Sri Lanka been flat 340, 350 pitch, there's no way Sri Lanka's winning that match.
Yeah, true.
So having rain has been a double-edged sword. It has made things more interesting.
Gripe number three. You would hardly guess that a World Cup is on in England if you're not at the ground or not at a bar.
Or living really close to it,
Or not at a bar which is playing TV. No. It's just playing Sky.
So this happened to me at the Southampton bar, where I went and I can't remember what match it was. It was a match happening in a different city and I wanted to watch it. I asked them to turn it to the cricket and the bar staff. It anyway took them like 15 minutes to find the cricket channel, possibly because they so rarely have to turn it on.
They were sitting on a gold mine and they didn't know. Yeah. It is literally a gold mine Sky subscription.
Yeah.
I mean, it's as expensive as that.
Yeah. And anyway, so they turned, and then 10 minutes later, a bunch of other people turn up and they wanted to switch to something else. It was like a football rerun, not even a live match. And because I was outnumbered, they turned it to a different channel. So, I mean, those are the kinds of things that happen in the UK, where in England, where people, cricket is, it's like, people say cricket is probably the second sport, but it's like cricket, then daylight, then more daylight, then more daylight.
You mean football?
Yeah, football, then all that space, and then cricket. And there have been so many people that either didn't know something was happening or had only just had a vague idea of things happening, that a cricket World Cup was going on, in a way that, like, even in Australia and New Zealand last time, that was not the case. I mean, New Zealand is a rugby country, but you couldn't get away from the cricket in New Zealand in the 2015 World Cup. In South Asia, there's just no way that you would not know. You could be an American, you just get into the airport and you would immediately know that there's a cricket World Cup happening in that country. It just has not been that kind of vibe here. In some ways, it's like a more profound, like so many boards across the world, SLC, you know, Lord knows, has a billion different things that's wrong with it.
And BCCI, PCB, they've got a lot of things wrong, but...
But at least this kind of feels like more profound letdown in a way than...
But would you put it at ICC's door or ECB's door?
I would probably say more ECB, because ICC doesn't run cricket in this country. And the taking off of free-to-air, I mean, every person who's ever become a cricket fan has done so by watching it on TV. And so at least, I mean, if you're not going to sell the TV rights, at least make it available like on YouTube, live streaming, right? There are other ways to do things now, but I've heard yesterday that the Six Nations Rugby decided they were given a huge offer by a cable channel to take their rugby onto subscriber TV, but they turned that down because the benefits of free-to-air TV outweighed them, and they took the long-term view, and cricket hasn't done that in this country. And I don't know if there are other factors as well, but it just feels like cricket's in a desperate state in England, and in the middle of the World Cup, that's not the vibe that you want, right? So
when you say ECB is responsible for a few of the problems with this World Cup, I think ECB, then we could credit ECB for the pitches we have got. These pitches have made the World Cup the success that it is.
Yeah.
Outside Sri Lanka and Pakistan.
Yeah.
They have addressed that balance between bat and ball beautifully.
Yeah.
And you go to every different ground is different conditions. There's no ground where you could have taken like 380 for granted.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been, I've been pleasantly surprised. At the start of the World Cup, I thought it was going to be, 350 plays 340, because that Pakistan England series was like that.
Yes.
And I thought that's what we were going to get the entire way through, but there's been some great low scoring thrillers. There's been some, the Brathwaite innings was a wonderful game. Even Afghanistan India was a great game. We've had some, under 250 chases that have really, got fans interested and got us going.
Even the 300 plus games, except for the one yesterday where New Zealand were bowled out for 186, most of them have been interesting chases. It's not like the game is gone. And Bangladesh chased once against West Indies. That was a nice game to watch.
Sri Lanka, West Indies only narrowly fell short against Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
After Sri Lanka got 338.
So we've got a wide range of kind of cricket matches we want to watch in 50 overs cricket.
The one is we haven't had like a super low scoring thriller like that Eden Park match in 2015
Australia
New Zealand. That's the one kind of match that we haven't got. But that's like a very, very minor gripe.
Now we are actually moving into praising this tournament.
Yeah.
Which it has got a lot of things right. First of all, the country. I can't imagine any country where you would travel so much and not be fatigued of travel.
Yeah.
It's the smoothest country to travel in.
Yeah, train rides, you can just turn up on the day. I mean, I've just been booking train rides on the day. Just leave when I want to. You arrive. Trains are very rarely late. You get to the place you want to. Just traveling around.
Public transport within the cities where the cricket matches are has been great.
Yeah. There's either a subway or a bus, or at the very worst, Uber works.
Facilities for spectators at the grounds have been great. And we appreciate it so much more because we come from Asia, where we are treated as maybe worse than the seats that are there, which are not cleaned in years.
Yeah.
And we come here and we really appreciate being treated as human beings, first of all. And getting to watch cricket at our convenience and getting access to drinking water without paying obnoxious sums for it, getting access to clean toilets, which we don't.
Talking very much about India now. Sri Lanka doesn't have many of these issues. Yeah.
Yes, okay, point taken.
And the other thing is how well attended the games have been. Which is also, a lot of it I hear is South Asians coming, some from South Asia itself.
But a lot are Britishians.
A lot of Britishians, a lot of US Indians apparently have made the trip down. So it's a World Cup that's largely been attended by Asians.
Again, the atmosphere has been so great. That's the good thing about the grounds here. They won't stop you from bringing your doles, from bringing your horns.
Apart from Lords, maybe. So there have been good things about this World Cup, but it's not enough to wipe out the major ills that the bigger problems of this tournament, basically.
Yeah, and other things. Let's just moving on to cricket. We have seen great fast bowling, return of proper fast bowling.
Yeah.
In Archer, in Wood, in Ferguson, in Stark, Bumrah.
Yeah. Malinga had a little bit of, I don't know.
Malinga is not.
I'd say fast anyway. Yeah. 140. Dude still hits 140. But anyway, I understand. It's the really quick bowlers. And also, there have been such good Yorkers bowled in this tournament.
Yes. Of the Yorker.
It's been, and the Yorker was something that was kind of going out of style a little bit.
It was becoming a high-risk delivery. It was, bowlers were actually playing percentages and bowling more length balls.
Yes.
Well, because Yorker is a high, you can easily go wrong with a Yorker.
Yeah, and then if you get it wrong, the risk is that you get hit, you pretty much always, or there's a high chance of you getting hit for four if you get it a foot either side of where you need to pitch it. So that's been great. And Bolt got an entire hat trick with Yorkers, which doesn't happen that often, like a hat trick with the same delivery.
Ferguson with a bouncer followed by a Yorker.
Yeah, that was a super ball.
Stark to Stokes, of course.
He was
a batsman on 89.
And it was Marlinga's Yorkers that brought the World Cup alive in some ways. So it's been wonderful, and the Yorker is one of the sights of cricket, one of these spectacles of cricket. A good Yorker rattling the stumps is hard to match something like that.
Batsmen have been challenged. There have been, and the really good ones have shown through.
Yeah,
Root, Williamson, Kohli.
Yeah. The one thing I'd say is wrist spin hasn't played as big a role as we all thought it might. I think partly because virtually no pitch has really turned. There have been slow pitches, but there have been no turning pitches.
Yeah, one or two, but I take your point that spin has generally struggled in this World Cup, except for maybe Chahal. Chahal. Sandner was good until yesterday.
Yeah, Tahir actually had a pretty good World Cup despite his team bombing out in the worst way possible. Tahir was pretty decent.
I'm sure Rashid Khan will come back a better bowler. This is the first time he's bowled 9 matches in a row against better teams than his and bowled 10 overs. He's more used to bowling 4 overs against teams that are either evenly matched, or if he's playing for Afghanistan, they're playing mostly with lesser teams because they don't get the chance to play these teams. And it's slightly unfair that they come to a World Cup and that's the first time they're facing them. I think this was...
And they haven't played in England. Yeah.
Yeah.
So can we talk about how depressing this South African campaign was?
Oh,
holy crap. I mean, I covered a lot of the games and I think they knew that because the two of their first 3 matches were against England and India, that there was a chance that they could be going, there'd be 3 matches in and having lost 2 of them because the two tournament favourites were there. But the way in which they've stunk up this World Cup, man, that has been a massive disappointment. Because they hadn't actually done that badly over the last year. They've won, I think, 5 series in a row. One was against Zimbabwe, 2 were against Sri Lanka, which basically doesn't count. But they'd also beaten Pakistan, whom they actually lost to in the tournament. They should not have underperformed to anywhere near that level.
But in a way, you could see it coming. I never thought of them as favourites because...
No, they were favorites.
The batting had issues. Hashim was struggling. There was no AB de Villiers.
Yeah.
And the bowling looks good on paper, but...
Rabada went missing.
What happened with Rabada. Rabada has been poorly managed because CSA don't have a say, I think, in this. Rabada has bowled more international balls than any fast bowler in the last 18 years.
By a huge margin.
Yes.
By the age of 24, no one has bowled as many balls in international cricket as he has at this age.
Yes.
And it's not like slightly. He's bowled like 30-40% more deliveries than the next best player.
And if you're talking the last 18 months, only Nathan Lyon, who bowls only in test cricket, has bowled more international balls than Rabada.
And he's a spinner.
Yes. Yeah. So that happens. CSA and Faf du Plessis now are on the record that they didn't want him to play the IPL, but they don't have the dollars. It's a dollar economy. They don't have the dollars to compensate Rabada if he has to pull out.
At a world tournament like this, this is when it really dawns on you how stacked the cricket world is against the smaller 7 nations.
It's an unfair sport.
Yeah.
And look at AB de Villiers.
Smaller 9, I should say now.
Yes. Thanks for the correction.
Yeah.
Look at AB de Villiers. Are you telling me if there hadn't been a couple of these leagues, he would have retired and he would have not played this World Cup?
Yeah, no, there's no chance. If there was no IPL to play, no, he's not even smaller leagues. He might have managed with like CPL, even if like the CPL and all the other leagues existed and the IPL didn't exist. There's no chance that he's not playing this World Cup.
And this is not a gripe against IPL, please.
Yeah.
This is a gripe against
the unfairness.
Yes.
Yeah.
IPL, I mean, with the availability of resources, the best resources being available to IPL, it might, and the teams being more evenly matched, it was actually a, despite being T20, as a competition, it's actually a better competition than the World Cup, as AB de Villiers said.
Though, I mean, is there any way that the IPL, that like Cicero Pereira can get an IPL contract so we end up in a situation where for the next World Cup, we don't have Cicero Pereira? Sri Lanka doesn't have to, Cicero Pereira retires. He's like the biggest myth of Sri Lanka. Anyway.
I mean, imagine being somebody who hates Cicero Pereira.
Yeah, imagine.
We could now move on to the semifinalists and what it means for the semifinalists.
Yeah.
To potentially win this tournament.
Yeah, for Australia it means crap all.
No, it's a great story.
It's a greater story if they win the Ashes. The Ashes is the great story. If they win the Ashes after that year, then this World Cup story will be absolutely buried.
You've just become English again.
Why?
You're rating Ashes.
No, I'm not rating Ashes.
Which happens saying, every 2 years.
I'm saying Australia rates the Ashes.
I'm not sure. I'm sure England.
Last time they won an Ashes in England was in 2001. The last time they won a World Cup was 4 years ago. They won like
not
three,
in England. The last time they won a World Cup in England was 99.
They've won three World Cups since their last England Ashes win. So I don't think they care. I mean, obviously they care, but like,
I mean, to the wider world, it will be, and to the wider world who didn't share the joy that the English fans did with the treatment that was meted out to Smith and Warner.
Yeah.
I think the rest of the world is in agreement that it was overreaction.
Yeah.
To something that happens frequently, but yes, was just taken.
Yeah. I mean,
it was just taken to ridiculous extents here, but it still is ball tampering. And ball tampering happens all the time.
For Australia, it wouldn't be such a massive deal.
I think to me, it will mean a lot. It will mean a hell of a lot to Australia because they have not done well in ODI cricket in the intervening years. And this is the first time they've got the team together in a long time, which by the team together. I mean Warner, Smith, Stark, Cummins.
Yeah.
Aaron Finch is, I think, the captain of the tournament.
Mm-hmm. I haven't watched a single Australia game.
The way he has handled his resources in the middle of the tournament, they were in a dilemma whether they let Stoinis go and get Mitch Marsh in, or whether they wait for Stoinis to recover from his, I'm not sure what injury it was, and then have him for the rest of the tournament. Because if they had let Stoinis go once, they couldn't have got him back unless somebody else had got injured. So now he was in these two or three games where he was with Glenn Maxwell as the fifth bowler, and the way he used his resources was excellent, and it was a tight game against Pakistan, which he won through his captaincy, through his bowling changes and the field placements.
So on to like
India.
On to India, yeah.
India.
I mean, it would obviously be crazy for India to win. The nation would go.
But on the flip side, I don't think it will be the end of the world if India don't win. The Indian fan has started to mature now. They are used to much more success now. They are used to winning a test series in Australia now. They are used to giving South Africa and England a fight in test matches in their countries. They are winning every test series in India. The IPL happens every year. They're winning a hell of a lot more. They know their team is genuinely very good. There's one or two missing links, but the bowling attack is the best in the world, arguably. Maybe it doesn't have the depth of, let's say, England, who have got Ben Stokes as a sixth bowler.
Yeah.
But I really don't think the Indian crowd will, Indian fan base will mourn losing in the final for a week.
Yeah.
They'll be filthy that day.
Yeah.
But they'll move on. They will not hound the captain in a mall or in a restaurant where he's trying to have a quiet meal, and they will not harass him.
Though the only player who's been booed by his own fans in this tournament is MS Dhoni.
Has he been?
Yeah, in Southampton, definitely.
Oh.
I was there when in that Afghanistan match, when he was batting quite slowly while they were trying to set a target, he was definitely booed.
Now that you remind me, and my sociology stands exposed. A few months ago, MS Dhoni's replacement Rishabh Pant was booed because he fluffed a stumping.
Yeah.
In India, in Mohali.
Yeah. So that's, I mean,
Okay, so India is just too vast.
No, I also think, like, think to Sri Lankan fans who like to fancy themselves like some of the most mature fans around. They also hoot at players when players mess up. But it's a very fleeting thing. They get over it. It's fine the next day.
As long as they get over it the next day and they don't get into personal spaces or get into personal abuse on social media. For the team, it will be very satisfying because it's a process that started 2 years ago where they made bold changes. They left out, I think they were test bowlers number one and number two at that time, Ashwin and Jadeja.
And one of the other disappointments of the World Cup, for me personally as a fan, is Yadav and Chahal not having completely clicked through those middle overs, because watching Rispin work, I mean, they did in that South Africa match against, but that was just like, you thought that was just going to be the start of a great World Cup for the two of them, but it hasn't turned out that way.
Weren't they good against Australia and Pakistan?
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, against Pakistan they were. Yes, they were.
Kuldeep Yadav arguably bowled the ball of the tournament.
Yeah. I think that ball is better than the Stark ball.
Well, what makes the Stark ball great is...
And such reaction makes it great.
I think there are three things in there. A, Stokes was not batting on 5 or 10 or 15.
Yeah,
he was on 89. Yeah. And he was not playing some crazy innings where he's hitting at everything. He was actually a proper batsman's innings.
Yeah.
So he was in, he was settled.
I thought Barber was on 20, he'd got himself a little settled as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And Barber is a better batsman than Stokes.
So, and B, everybody knew what was coming.
Yeah.
I think Ian Ward, one of the best commentators going around, he said it on air that the Yorker is coming. Everybody knew the Yorker is coming. We know every eighth ball that Stark bowls is a Yorker. Every third ball that he bowls is over 145 kilometers an hour. So we knew a Yorker is coming, a fast Yorker is coming, and he delivered it, and Stokes was still late on it, and the pitch had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Kuldeep still needed the pitch to do something for him. Here, the pitch had nothing to do with it.
But the pitch is a part, using the pitch is not necessarily an argument against.
It's not outlawed.
Yeah. Just internally do not like the thought that great balls can only be bowled in England-Australia contests, the ball of the 20th century was Shane Warne to Gatting. The ball of the 21st century apparently is that ball to James Vince from Stark. And so, well, I mean, in the context of all of that, like the giving the ball and the catch of the tournament, obviously is Stokes on the boundary. Apparently,
one of the things I envy about Australians is they are almost all great storytellers. But one of the things I don't envy is the hype machine. There's nothing like the Australian hype machine.
No, I don't know. The English hype machine is pretty good.
Oh no, it's not as big as the Australian hype machine. So to say, State Arm, which is their website.
Yes.
ECB's website never plays anymore.
No. But maybe the ECB have been caught napping. I think like the hype machine in columns and stuff.
And you don't have Michael Slater, Ian Healy.
Like,
you don't have those commentators feeding you again and again every time.
But we've had former England players say that there's no way that Stokes catches even in the top five of this tournament catches.
No, it's not.
It's not. Of this tournament.
I think Nasser is a great commentator. He just got carried away at that moment.
He is a great commentator.
That's an aberration.
It's fine, and you'd much rather commentators getting carried away rather than being measured in big moments like that. But I'm not just talking about Nasser. I'm talking about the following day, what you read in the papers, what you read everywhere. It was just like, it was a good catch. It was a great feat of athleticism. The Martin Guptill catch was on, you know, against Steve Smith when Lockie Ferguson was bowling. That for pure difficulty. And
I think Sheldon Cottrell was the catch of the tournament. How easy he made
over,
it.
Over Guptill.
Yes.
Guptill, dude, he hooked the ball. It was 142K delivery. Smith pretty much nailed it.
I'm behaving like the journalist you were talking about.
Yeah.
I have not seen the catch.
Yeah.
Coming back to India is, it will be a great satisfaction for them that they started this process 2 years ago.
But every team did.
Not Pakistan.
Yeah. Sri Lanka tried, actually. Sri Lanka did try.
And then they picked the captain. Then they picked the captain who has never played any ODI cricket in the last 4 years.
Yeah. And a bunch of other players, bunch of passenger players. But anyway, this is not about Sri Lanka. So India, yeah.
Yeah, so they dropped the test bowlers, bowler numbers 1 and 2 for two wrist spinners who were untested. They went with them. And yeah, granted, there was immediate success in Sri Lanka, as you would have seen, in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
But they went with them and they backed them to do well in any conditions, anywhere. Even if they had a bad match, they've managed Bumrah really well. Batting wise, okay, I think they could have been more proactive with batting. They could have rested Dhoni for a few games in between to try other options to see what works. Resting Dhoni doesn't mean you're disrespecting a legend or you're shelving him for the World Cup. You could have just played two or three series with the other batsmen and seen how it goes.
But isn't the Dhoni thing, the package that he brings, the tactical nous that he brings on the field? There have been times I've watched a few India matches in this World Cup where Kohli just completely takes a back seat and Dhoni runs the show.
It also says a lot about Kohli's maturity. I know it happens, but it says a lot about how secure Kohli is as a captain, or how secure he is with Dhoni at least.
Yeah. I mean, there have been times in Sri Lankan cricket where captains, with former captains in the team who are obviously more tactically mature, and they haven't let that former captain have the say that he... Malinga was one who did do that, but there have been others who haven't done that in the same way. So, yeah, that is a great sign of maturity. And there's been nothing like... Kohli has actually been a wonderful player to watch through the tournament. He's been...
Without having scored 100.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's 550s in a row, is it?
Yeah, 550s in a row. My only criticism of India would be they're playing within themselves, and as tournaments are, you have one bad day where you play within yourself, and they're being very smart because they can trust their bowlers. They're batting within themselves. But there could be one day where, you know, they go for...
I mean, their chase of England's score was pathetic. The last couple of... After Kohli...
I think Dhoni's safety net kicked in. I'm sure they hadn't calculated net run rates at that time.
But maybe in the semi-finals and in actual knockout situations, they won't play within themselves.
No, maybe not. But I think the way they approach an innings is they don't go looking for 350.
Yeah.
It has to happen organically for them.
Yeah.
They go looking for 300.
Yeah.
If they are in a good position, they just organically take over.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, semi-finals and finals, I'm expecting flat wickets.
Yeah. And England don't play like that. England go out looking for 350.
Sometimes they end up with 280 and they lose the game, which is what India don't want to happen.
Yeah.
Because they trust their bowlers to do the job.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's no right or wrong way. It's just different
styles. Yeah.
As long as, and I know Kohli is not one to look back at it with regret.
Yeah.
If he makes a decision, he commits completely to the decision and he just lives with it.
Can we talk a little bit about what a joy Jasprit Bumrah has been in this tournament? My favorite player of the tournament to watch has been Bumrah.
And if you remember, they had asked us to do predictions. I had predicted him to be the bowler player of the tournament.
Yeah.
Which he could still end up being.
He won't be because he doesn't have the wickets column, but he has been the most valuable player. It's between him and Shakib.
Shakib has been, but because Bangladesh are not there in the semis, India have two big games. Bumrah, even if he goes for 10 overs in those two matches, I would give the trophy to him.
Yeah. He's just
been, and even if he doesn't take a wicket in those games,
he's like the best cricketing insurance policy. Like, I remember that Afghanistan match where India underperformed with the bat, and Afghanistan were batting pretty well. Kuldeep and Chahal weren't really getting much out of that surface. They were Nabi was batting well. They were at times like in touching distance. You thought maybe they could do this, but there were four Bumrah overs left.
Yeah,
and you just knew in the back of your mind, he's just looming large over this chase. He's going to come in and shut it down.
Only hope was for four outside edged or inside edged boundaries in those four Bumrah overs.
Yeah. And as good as Shami has been, he's benefited lots from Bumrah being at the other end, because batsmen are not taking risks. Not taking risks because in some ways they can't take risks. I mean, if you're nailing every single Yorker...
Or a slower ball or a back of a length ball. If you try to force the issue, you'll get out.
And I feel like Bumrah is in such a state now that even if he has a bad day, batsmen might give him a little
bit of reputation.
Yeah. He's just on top of his game. Just great to watch a fast bowler who does all of that without the attitude, just gets the job done in an incredibly efficient and clever way. Like, also just got a massive brain on him.
Yes. He knows, we had done stats on this.
Yeah.
If in a test match, if India are batting first, he has a great first spell because he's watched the game when India are batting and he just knows what length to bowl.
Yeah.
But if India are bowling first, he sometimes tends to have an ordinary first spell. But by the time he comes for his second spell before lunch, he has figured out what length to bowl and is always better in the...
That's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's India then. Dhoni is a fascinating story. This could be the end of his ODI career at least. How it ends, I think his destiny's child, and we could have him scoring even a 50 of 70 balls and staying not out in a World Cup winning chase.
I can see that happen as well. It's just everything
it
that's
will
led
be interesting
up to it
how if,
has been disappointing. And I say that as a massive Dhoni fan.
His mind never stops working. There's a great example of it in IPL games. Of how his mind works. Like, for example, if they're losing a game, the opposition needs one run and one over. What would a captain do? They would bring the field up, try to stop the single, try to take the game deeper, try to get a wicket. No, Dhoni keeps the field out and people criticize him, but that's because he doesn't want the team to hit a boundary and get three extra runs, which might end up hurting his team later in net run rate.
Yeah.
That's how deeply he thinks about it.
So
now we are left with England. I mean,
nervous laughter.
England and New Zealand are very interrelated because apparently England are the beasts created by New Zealand.
Yeah, or like we're talking about copyright at the start of the podcast. I feel like McCullum could seriously sue this England team for how much they plagiarized.
But he won't because he's also been openly credited by Morgan to be his sounding board, to be his mentor.
He's like the footnote at the end of this England story.
Yeah.
He's in the bibliography.
Yeah, true.
They still haven't. Archer coming into the tournament has made me like them a bit more.
Without Archer, they wouldn't be in the semifinals, let me tell you that.
Yeah, for sure. Archer coming into the tournament has given them a dynamism that they didn't have with the ball. And so I always think, you know, bowlers are better people than batsmen. It's human being wise. It's not a cricketing point.
It's not a contest.
If you're a bowler, you're a better person than a batsman.
There's no contest.
Yeah, though. It's just, if you're a fast bowler or a spinner, especially, you're a stand up human being. But, They came in with without that kind of really dynamic bowling attack, and Archer has given them some dynamism. But I'm still not a fan of watching like all these boundaries being hit on flat decks. Like, it's not a brand of cricket that inspires me. If you've got one or two bolters who are hitting these boundaries when everyone else is struggling, that's a great thing to watch. But when you've got tracks that suit you and you go for it. It's just not as inspiring to me.
That was my initial thought too, looking at these games. But looking at the last two games that England have played at Edgbaston and at Chesley Street, I'm slightly converted because you could say, hey, when Roy and Bairstow batted, the pitch was at its flattest and it slowed down and everybody else struggled. But the other way of looking at it could be, hey, which other pitch have you seen flick a switch and become slow?
Well, Owen Morgan said that he's never played on a pitch that changed as dramatically as that. He said that in the post-match press conference. So, and also the kinds of shots that we saw Bairstow and Roy play, hitting through the line, you never see people do that on anything other than like a completely flat.
I think they made the conditions look a fair bit easier than they were.
Maybe, yeah.
Especially against New Zealand.
Yeah. Who are also missing Ferguson, by the way.
That's true.
Yeah.
They created their own lengths. But I also saw good signs of not just playing their own game yesterday. I saw signs of it in Morgan, the way Morgan batted it. It was one of his best innings I've seen, although he didn't bat till the end. And he also said that I was not trying to hit the ball in the air and it was the pitch that did it because it was slow and it didn't come on. He ended up chipping it to cover, I think. But the fact that he readjusted the target in his mind shows me that this England team has range.
That was
the criticism earlier that they're batting
that
on
they're
it.
One, yeah. They're two monochrome.
Yes.
Yeah.
With Morgan and Stokes, I've seen the willingness to adjust, to recalibrate targets that they want to set. And I'm a fan of their bowling unit.
Yeah.
They've got two really fast bowlers. They've got Chris Wokes, who's a cricketer's cricketer. He's is just elegant in everything it does, and if there's even a little bit to be extracted out of the pitch,
yeah,
he will.
Yeah.
Stokes is a very underrated all-rounder.
Rashid,
Moeen. I might go for Moeen because wrist spinners have not had that kind of advantage over finger spinners in this tournament, and Moeen is a better batsman and he has more control over where he's pitching
the
ball.
But wrist spinners have still been better than finger spinners. I think they're still averaging at least 10.
Shakib, Mehdi Hasan.
No, I did run the numbers on this.
Okay.
Yeah, wrist spinners have still had a substantially better tournament that you would pick a wrist spinner over a finger spinner.
All right. But I like their attack, and if anything, their attack is suited to slightly flatter conditions because they have perfected that art of bowling hard lengths, running their fingers across or along the seam, bowling off cutters, leg cutters.
Yeah.
It's you might call it defensive bowling.
Yeah.
But that's how bowlers have survived in ODI cricket over the last 4 years.
But they've taken that philosophy to a whole new height. I mean, like, they're as defensive as any bowling attack has been.
I think
apart from Archer,
it slightly showed in that Lord's game where they didn't pitch the ball up when the conditions required them to pitch the ball up.
Yeah.
And then Stark and Berendorf did, and they won the game.
Yeah.
It will be a great story.
It would be a good story.
England winning the World Cup at home, finally winning a World Cup.
Will that spark
the greatest English team in one day cricket since the 92
ever
team?
Assembled,
since the 92.
Well, you think the 92 team is better than this team?
No, you have these criticisms against this team, right? That it's not.
But like, it's a low bar.
Okay.
For English one day teams.
I'd be willing to consider this the greatest England one day team ever assembled.
Okay. And a batting like that. If other teams could do what they're doing, which is just create flat tracks and have the...
They do. They've done it for the last
they
do, year.
And they would. I mean, any other team, if they could find a formula this successful as it has been for England, they would very easily switch to that formula.
England's batting
might is incredibly formidable despite the fact, even if you criticize them for being flat track bullies, they're still bullies on a level that we probably have never seen before.
I have a little bit of empathy for what they said about the pitches. It's never a good look when a team that has lost a few matches criticizes the pitches, but when the world over the last 4 years you've played in conditions, everybody's preparing for the World Cup over the last 2 years, the world over, except for the odd wicket here and there, you are playing on pitches where 350 plays 350, you're sort of sending a message that this is what we're preparing you for, and then at a World Cup, which is your marquee event, to get these pitches, it can seem unfair to the participants. We are enjoying the spectacle.
Yeah.
But to the participants, it can seem a little unfair. Hey, it's because the flat pitches don't exist just in England.
Yeah.
They happen everywhere.
Yeah. So moving on to New Zealand, I guess, that's the last one. Clearly it would be crazy.
Best story of this World Cup if they win. Now that's the best possible story left.
Yeah, possible story. Unless a team gets disqualified and Pakistan take the most most backdoor entry that anyone could ever possibly take.
Which cannot be ruled out.
Yeah. The Bunwe, maybe Bunwe is still alive. But barring that improbability, New Zealand is the best possible story remaining in this World Cup. Have a huge amount of time for Williamson. I think
definitely. So
generally New Zealand press conferences are boring as hell because they all talk about each other and the team and all that kind of stuff. But I feel like he's really grown into himself as a person, as a cricketer, I don't think there's any pressure on anyone to be this nice guy. So a few years ago, we're covering cricket in New Zealand. When McCullum and Hessen did all this marketing change to make New Zealand nice guys in cricket, that filtered down to the domestic system where even domestic players were feeling the pressure to be like straight down the middle, straight shooters, like just nice dudes because otherwise they felt like they wouldn't get picked. I don't think that there's that kind of pressure anymore. It's just they're just being themselves.
Yeah.
Because Williamson is just... He's just what he is.
One place that they're not themselves is at press conferences, at other media interactions where they're just dummies speaking PR lines.
Okay, you've covered more of that than me.
Except for Williamson, who has been great.
Funny, yeah.
Who's been, yesterday he just took the piss out of the situation where he knows he's in the semifinal. He knows Pakistan need to beat Bangladesh by 316 runs, but he just kept biting his tongue. Yeah. He didn't speak about the Silver Valley. He kept saying, if we are fortunate enough.
Yeah. If we're lucky enough to get there.
And he knew he was taking the piss.
Yeah. And earlier on, when that match against South Africa, when he hit that through third man.
It was against South Africa, yes. That was a great answer. Yeah.
And everyone was like, how did you know, what was going through your mind?
Premeditate that shot.
And he's like, no, I was just trying to get a single. But then before that, he just made a joke about, I just turned the bat at the last moment.
Yeah, I was trying to take a single. I was thinking of single, but at the last nanosecond, I thought, hey.
Yeah.
And then he stopped and
turned the bat. He's been very good. And it's like, again, I go back to the point about, like, if a nation of 4.5 million can't have two major trophies, but if there's a timeline in which New Zealand win the Cricket World Cup and lose the Rugby World Cup, that's the one I'm signing on for. It'll be great for New Zealand to live in a world where their cricket team are world champions and their rugby team aren't. What I'm saying is, it would be good for New Zealand cricket, because New Zealand rugby just dominates cricket to such an extent that in 2 months' time people will be like, oh yeah, the cricket team's also champions, but really the main thing is the All Blacks have won again. So I want, like, cricket to have its real moment in the sun in New Zealand, and for that to happen, the All Blacks have to lose.
So the one observation people make about New Zealand cricket at World Cups is that, barring 2015 World Cup where they were the dominant side, they say they are just efficient, they do enough to get to the semifinals, and they don't have enough quality to go past that.
Yeah. My counter to them would be like, New Zealand are like the anti-England of this World Cup, in the sense that
they've adjusted to every condition.
Yeah, in the sense that they are good at bouncing from team to team, from venue to venue, sizing up. There's no batsman who sizes up conditions like Williamson.
No. There's no team that sizes up pitches like New Zealand.
Yeah.
Although, admittedly, they did get one wrong.
It hurts me to say that, because Sri Lanka used to be that team, but not anymore.
Hmm.
But now it's...
with Mahela and Sangha there.
Yeah,
and
Mahela especially. That was why Sri Lanka of the late 2000s and early this decade were the best tournament team on the planet, because they did that every single series. But now New Zealand have taken on that mantle, and they're so smart about it. I mean, and the other thing is that someone like a Saudi, they've been ruthless about keeping him out when Henry's performing well.
And doesn't sit out and mop around. He helps them out with his experience.
Yeah. And that's credit to the team culture that they've created.
Yeah.
I
remember in 2016 they came and they dropped both Saudi to the World T20.
Yeah, and
they
Bolt
came to India.
Yeah.
Both Saudi and Bolt were out.
Yeah. And then they won that match against India on like a turning track. So New Zealand have now form for being. And it's a bit unfair, because they obviously don't have the quality of these other teams. The reason they punch above their weight is because they outsmart them.
Yes.
And they, like, no one is claiming that New Zealand are in the league even of the other three teams.
In bilateral play, they're not.
They're not. But they know how to bounce from team to team.
But now it's up to having two good days, and their bowling attack is definitely capable of it.
If there's swing to be gained, and this is like a massive if, because there has been no swing. If there's swing in the air, then I can see Bolt running through any team.
And then there's Ferguson. Ferguson has been the find of the tournament. I mean, he's been around.
Yeah.
We have all seen the potential.
But he has blossomed
in to his own in this tournament beautifully.
Yeah.
Then Henry is a little under pressure. He's emerged as a weak link of that attack. Sander has been lovely to watch.
Yeah.
He's not had the results, but the way the control he has on is almost like Vittori. The control he has on everything he does.
And to have a bowler like Niche who can bowl that pressure over against Brathwaite.
And if they swing, De Grondhom.
Yeah, De Grondhom has
infamously said by Mike Hessen, he has the optimum swing pace.
Yeah,
which Colin thinks is just a nice way of saying is slow.
So they've
got depth in that attack. It's the batting that's the problem.
Yeah, and Taylor's gone missing in parts of the tournament. He hasn't really had a good innings.
He's had
Bangladesh innings.
So no, he had a good innings against West Indies too.
Oh, yes,
when they were both
batting
in the first over again.
Yeah. Williamson obviously is.
Latham and the openers have been a problem.
Yeah, I think from a batting perspective, the semi-finals are about Guptill. if Guptill can, especially on the kind of flat tracks that we're expecting in Manchester, and well, they'll be playing the Manchester match, aren't they?
They'll be playing in Manchester, and if they make it to the final at Lords.
Yeah, but Lords is like kind of a law unto itself. But like Manchester, it's probably going to be a flat pitch.
Yes, and it's not going to be slow. And I think in the first two or three games that have been played in Manchester, it's not been slow.
Yeah.
So it should suit Guptill, and there's a precedent
And Guptill is like Guptill is probably more of a flat track bully than any of the England batsmen.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a monster on flat pitches. Yes. Like, remember the 2-3-8 or whatever he hit against West Indies in that quarterfinal last World Cup.
I'm just hoping he does what Watson did at the Champions Trophy in 2010 in South Africa. He barely scored a run in the league stages.
Yeah. Or what Gilchrist did in the 2007 World Cup.
Yes, was backed. Yeah. Backed entirely by the team right to the end, and in the semi-final and finally just won those two games on his own bat.
Yeah, they're all being like, it's everything's been set out of kilter by the fact that their openers have sucked in this tournament, and that's like the puzzle piece that they need to put in together to complete it.
Having said that, I wouldn't want Guptill to play a crazy innings. I would want him to play out Stark and Cummins, because there has been evidence that if you play out Stark and Cummins, and even if you score 35 for no loss in the first 10 overs, Australia can be vulnerable.
I don't think that's Guptill's game, though.
He might need to do it.
Yeah,
and he almost did it.
Nichols could do that.
He almost did it, if you remember, against South Africa, the game that we watched together. And he then ran himself. He got out hit wicket while setting off for a single. It was unfortunate. That innings could have turned the tournament around for him. It's highly unlikely that they will get the better of two deep attacks in two days.
They won't.
But if they do, if this team gets the better of two varied and deep bowling attacks in 2 nights, or 2 days actually, it will redeem the tournament for me.
Yeah. It would. If New Zealand win it, then it goes back to being one of the better World Cups that we've had.
Or one of the best.
Yeah, it could be one of the best. I wouldn't say best just because we had like 2 or 3 weeks of absolutely drab, uninspiring crap until that Sri Lanka match.
Brings us to the debate. It's a little bit like chicken and egg.
So basically,
because it has no answer to this debate. Are Sri Lanka Pakistan light or are Pakistan Sri Lanka light?
there's no question in my mind that Pakistan are Sri Lanka light. As Osman also admitted in your former podcast, there is nothing that Pakistan have done recently that matches South Africa winning two test matches in a row.
The first one I can still see.
And that was, and what you guys didn't mention that podcast was that Sri Lanka had a new captain. Like, they sacked Dinesh Mal, dropped him from the team.
Yeah.
Dimuth Karanatha comes in.
Yeah.
Half the attack was injured. Kasun Rajitha was out. Rajitha was there. Lahiru Kumaru, who had done well in Australia, was out. Nuwan Pradeep was out. Surangal Akmal was still there. Basically, that attack in Durban had, like, Vishwa Fernando, Rajitha, and who was the other bowler? Lasith Thambudeniya, who was on debut. So you had, like, a guy who was playing his first, fourth, and fifth match or something. That was the attack.
Yeah. I can still see the first test happening. It was a freak test.
Yeah.
But to win the
Port Elizabeth game.
It was much more clinical in that.
And
as front runners in the series to do it.
Yeah. And the way Kusal Mendis and Oshita Fernanda came out and battered in that last day, absolutely dominated this great South Africa attack on a pitch that had seen 18 or something wickets fall the previous day. Sri Lanka were also, Sri Lanka's wrist spin, left arm spinner, Lasith Thambudeniya, who had got a 5-wicket haul in the previous test, got injured in that first innings, like a broken finger. So they were a bowler down for the majority of that test, which it was a short test, but they were still a bowler down for an entire second innings. So all of that considered, but in this tournament, Sri Lanka have beaten the favourites, which Pakistan also have done, but Sri Lanka came in with a much bigger shock. It's a much bigger shock. That was the upset of the tournament. And then to do stuff like Angelo Matthews getting that wicket against West Indies after he had not bowled a single ball. So West Indies would have probably won that match had Nicholas Puran, had he stayed until the 50th over. West Indies probably would have won that match because he was batting so well. He was absolutely slamming everything around, like Malinga was getting hit, everybody was getting hit, and Matthews, so Dimut Karana had gone super aggressive and tried to bowl them out, and he hadn't been able to, and Pooran was still batting, and so they had two overs to make up. There was three overs in the game to go, and one Lasith Malinga over left, and the leg spinner that Sri Lanka played, Jeffrey Wandesay, was having a terrible game, so they had no options. Matthews puts his hand up, hasn't bowled for 8 months. Not in the nets, probably not in, like, backyard, he probably hasn't bowled. Comes in, bowls, like, this very uninspiring length wide of off-stump delivery. Nicks the dude off. Wins the game. Like, sorry, that kind of thing does not happen in elite sport.
No.
That should not happen.
You should not be hoping for that to happen playing elite sport.
Yeah, it's like a guy bailing his entire team out, but at the same time being completely unsuitable to bailing the team out and yet doing it. Like, that's those kinds of things. I don't think even Pakistan have managed in this tournament.
Not in this tournament.
Yeah. No. So yeah, I think we've settled that debate.
In this tournament, yes.
Yeah. Is that a good place to end this?
This is a good place to end this.
We're still in the cemetery. No one's called the cops on us.
Yes.
So we'll let the dead rest.
Yes.
And end this podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.